to We the People. On the program today, a question that's being debated in many a forum. And that question is this: can free speech be absolute or should it be subjected to reasonable restrictions? Now, our constitution actually underlines that there can be reasonable restrictions. But the debate gets muddied when it becomes about the role of the government. In the backdrop of an extremely volatile few weeks for India, we've seen the strife in Assam, we've seen the riots at Azad Maidan, and we've seen the tragic flight of people from the northeast, from the cities of their residence, going back to their states. It has been said that the power of rumour to incite violence is a very real one, and no government can afford to ignore it. That said, we have seen a raging controversy around the government decision over the last week to 10 days to actually block a few hundred web pages and some Twitter handles. After many protests, the government insisted that it had only clamped down on web pages that actually were capable of inciting communal violence or contributing to the unrest. But is that really the case? Or is this a case of the government blurring the lines between free speech and hate speech? Is this about political censorship? Let me take this before I get to the politics of it, and it is a deeply political issue. Let me take this to the Secretary of Telecom. We have R. Chandrasekhar here with us. And Mr. Chandrasekhar, in many ways, you've had the tough job of coming out in the last week and having to defend something that has been criticized from many, many quarters. And one of the main criticisms, sir, has been that there hasn't been transparency in communicating to the people of this country that these are the kind of web pages that have actually been blocked. These are the kind of Twitter handles that we sought fit to block. There have also been instances of journalists complaining about being blocked. There are instances of hapless Twitter users saying, why me? I don't even write about political stuff. And there are instances of a blogger in Karachi who first broke the news that many of the images of atrocities in Burma had been morphed, him having been blocked. Why has there been so much confusion?
Okay. I think, first of all, let me start by saying that I believe in free speech. It's not only a part of the constitution, but the freedom of speech and freedom of expression is something which gives strength to our society, and that is what gives all the self-corrective impulses that exist in our setup. Having said that, the point that you started out with, that is this an unfettered right,
yeah,
or is it in some way bounded? And if so, what are those bounds? And if there are bounds, and we accept that there are bounds, and I think by now the conventional wisdom is that there are some bounds, it's not completely unbounded. For example, globally, child pornography is something which is simply not tolerated.
No, we accept, that our constitution says reasonable restrictions.
Right.
The question is that what happened this time?
Right. So now the question is whether in this particular instance, that right and that power that the government has was exercised in the most appropriate manner.
Yeah.
Was the content selected properly? Was exactly that content which was found objectionable the one which was blocked? Or did a larger amount of content get blocked because some parts of it were objectionable? Did it get blocked for a longer period of time or for a shorter period? Did you give an opportunity to the people whose content was blocked? These are some of the questions.
What's your answer to some of those questions?
The answer is very simple. When you face a problem of public order and a law and order situation, the system depends upon the people who are in charge of maintaining law and order to make an assessment of what are the causative factors and then take whatever preventive steps are required to deal with the immediate situation on ground. That's not the time when you provide an opportunity, go into those steps and then have a protracted process, because by the time you go through that whole process, there may be an impact on the ground.
So are you saying in the rush to do this, because the priority was to address the unrest, mistakes may have been made, people who shouldn't have been blocked could have got blocked? Are you conceding that?
I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is that when it is blocked, we may assume that this is all being blocked without adequate information. But let's not forget that a law enforcement agency, people responsible for security, are actually acting on the basis of either complaints received by somebody or some specific event which has taken place on the ground. There have been instances where there have been content on sites which have maybe been put by some other people.
Yeah.
But in many of these cases, it does require a specific action by the person before it goes onto his or her site. So the point I'm making is that there is a method for addressing any grievance or complaint which a person may have, which can be done separately.
Okay.
But when you're dealing with the situation, once a law and order, a law enforcement agency has made an assessment,
you go with it.
You act first and then make corrections as you go along. You
make
need
corrections.
To be safe.
All right, make corrections as you go along. Priority has to be what is perceived or assessed to be social unrest. Jay Panda, I don't think anybody, or maybe there are a few people, who would get up and say speech doesn't cause riots, actions do. It is the failure of the state to inspire a sense of security among its people, so don't focus on speech. But many of you, and I imagine you to be one of them, perhaps don't make that argument. You would allow for reasonable restrictions if there was a law and order problem. The problem here, and I'm asking you this because you are among the politicians on Twitter who have blackened your display page, joining the protest by sections of the online world against what has been called government censorship. Why did you do that? Because when you hear the secretary speak, he's saying, hang on, my priority was law and order.
I want to clarify that while I've blackened my display picture on Twitter, it's not in solidarity with any other politician. In fact, it's not even in solidarity with some of the other people who have done so. But it is in solidarity with the many dozens of ordinary netizens who have been asking me, who have been writing to me to show this this protest.
Yeah.
Let me point something out. Our problem is that, yes, the Constitution permits reasonable restrictions.
Yeah.
What is reasonable? Now, let's look at the freest of societies. In the US, which has, by the way, not had a terror repeat after 9/11, the only thing that is censored is child pornography. If you look at the UK, which has done a reasonably good job of preventing terror attacks repeats, they have only four specific criteria. They will censor on the net libel, copyright, incitement of terrorism, and child pornography. Now, we have had a law which was from 2000, the IT Act of 2000, was amended in 2011 with rules that are so vague, that are so long, that it can be used to censor just about anybody and anything. Let me give you examples.
Yeah.
It says that anything that is disparaging can be censored. If it talks about gambling, it can be censored, but certain states in India permit gambling. It says if it's obscene, it can be censored without defining what is obscene. It says if anybody tweets something insulting to another nation, that can be censored. So, if somebody protests what China is doing, they can be censored.
You're saying there's too much ambiguity.
It is just a typical bureaucratic way
of keeping
this wide scope of shutting anything down that's not right for a democracy. But I want to say something. We can argue about the government's intent. And clearly, they have shut down some journalists and some completely innocuous Twitter accounts, which have no connection to inciting terrorism or anything like that. I'm going to reserve my judgment about the government's intent, but there can be no question about its incompetence.
Let me take that to Manish. I'll come back to you. Manish,
just one more thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Just one more thing. Why has there been no repeat of 9/11 in the US? Because even terror incitement sites, they don't shut down. They monitor them so that they have advance information of what's being planned and they are ready to preempt it.
Now, it's interesting, that you quoted the United Kingdom, because actually during the race riots, you had David Cameron speak about shutting down BlackBerry Messenger and shutting down social media, and then they appointed an expert panel. And the expert panel found, very interestingly, and I'm just going to share the quote with you.
They've opened a debate. What we should do. They haven't taken preemptive action.
And let me share the quote with you. And the quote was that there is no simple switch-off solution.
Right.
That viral silence can often be as dangerous as viral noise. Now, is that what's happening here? That while, let's even allow for the good intention, the fact was that we wanted to control a very inflammable situation as the state, but have we actually, in doing this, multiplied the problem if it existed online? Have you actually ended up, sir, making heroes out of people who were never maybe always very decently spoken netizens to begin with? Manish Tiwari, this is the problem when the political leadership is perceived to be silent at the top, speak through brave people like yourselves on television every night, and not get social media. And I'll tell you that as somebody who spends a lot of time on Twitter, I don't necessarily like a lot of people on Twitter. They come across as people who are extremely rude, who can be extremely abusive, who can be extremely communal. But when it's done like this, A, you end up making martyrs out of such people, and B, it's so ineffective because you close down one page and another will spring. You close down one handle and another person will come up. Add to that the perception that Jay said, that even if the intention was good, which he's raising a question mark on, the execution has been ham-handed. You've targeted people who didn't need to be targeted. You've targeted journalists. You've targeted people, and we'll speak to one such person who's saying, why me? What's it got to do with me? Why am I blocked?
Well, I think, Barkha, there are two or three issues which need to be both qualified and need to be elaborated.
Yeah.
First, I think insofar as the debate on what is reasonable in terms of restricting free speech is concerned, I think that's been judicially determined and the parameters of that have been clearly laid down.
Yeah.
So therefore, I don't think there's any ambiguity with regard to that. The second thing is that the mandate of Section 69A of the Information Technology Act and the rules with regard to safeguards and blocking, you know, is fairly clear. And Rule 9 allows the government, if it thinks that there's an expedient situation in order to protect the sovereignty of the state or public order, to go ahead with this blocking on an interim basis. Number three, with all due respect to my friend Jay, you know, I think the comparison that he's made with the United States is a little erroneous for the simple reason that the fault lines in India are very apparent. And you just need to press on a fault line and you have an explosion. So therefore, under these circumstances, I think when you're dealing with a country like India, you need to be extremely careful, because even the smallest of provocations can lead to a most dangerous conflagration.
By the way,
the last point I would like to make is, you see, for example, suppose if I was to abuse my good friend, Mr. Jay Panda. I mean, if he's uncivilized like I am, if he's uncivilized like I am, you know, he would punch my nose. But if he's civilized as he is, he would possibly take me to court. But in a situation whereby the abuse is coming from anonymous quarters which cannot be identified, and then if you sort of extrapolate it and multiply it to a situation whereby it can create the kind of sectarian tension, you know, which can totally throw social order asunder, you know, you are dealing with a monster.
Okay,
so therefore, I think there is a very strong case which is made out that if at all it is warranted, there should be reasonable restriction. And if somebody has a problem with it, I think we have a very robust legal system which can take care of any abuse or any transgression by the government.
Okay, can I just make the point, though, that while talking about the United States, we've forgotten the story of a young boy called Vikram Budhi, who actually was sent to jail because on his Facebook page, I think, if I'm not wrong, or on Yahoo or something, on Yahoo, he said that George Bush should be killed. He was speaking up against the invasion of Iraq on a discussion forum, and he was actually arrested for that. And I can tell you, and this is just a question to take to you, Pranesh Prakash, that there are any number of wackos online, along with lots of really exciting people who make connectivity possible, who make information dissemination possible. There are wackos too who talk like this. And the question is, do you just ignore them? What does a government do, any government, do in a time of social unrest?
I think in a time of social unrest, there is leeway provided in laws for the government to take action. The law existing and the law allowing for it is a very different matter from the government actually making use of it. There are, as shown in the UK, much better ways of combating situations of riots. Okay, as we have seen in India, for instance, there are people who provoke riots from podiums, yet don't get arrested. As we have seen in the UK, there are people who take part in riots and have been punished a great deal.
That's a great point, and I do want to take this back to the politicians eventually, that we've never seen a politician actually arrested for hate speech, and you know, there are any number of them who are much more capable of inciting communal violence in the mainline and in the non-virtual world. But Pranish, just a quick summary from you, because as the policy director for the Center for Internet and Society, you analyzed the accounts that were actually blocked. You analyzed the URLs and you analyzed some of the handles, and you said you reached a figure, if I'm not wrong, of 309. And you said actually this is a bit of a misleading figure because it combines pages as well as websites. And you raised some very interesting questions. Among them were, there are people who write offline what they do online, so why is no action taken against them when they write the same things offline? The other question that you had for what the government did was, why was there no attempt to work along with the social media? Why was it so adversarial? Why was there no real engagement with the social media? What to you was the most bizarre thing about what's happened in the last week?
It's just what you right now said. For me, I'm very certain of this. I'm not questioning the government's motives. By looking at the list, it's very clear to me that the majority of the stuff that they did block was what I would consider communal in nature, okay, or communally sensitive. Yet, they did not go about it the right way. They could have done a much better job of it, I believe. Going back to a slightly larger point about free speech,
yeah.
I think you can look at it at three different levels. One, at the level of laws, and whether the laws are proportionate, whether the laws are reasonable, whether they're transparent,
yeah,
etc. And in India, they actually are not. Section 69A and the rules under Section 69A are not, in my opinion, reasonable at all.
Yeah.
For instance, just to make one point, these accounts were blocked. The list of the URLs which were blocked by ISPs was leaked to us, and I did analysis of that. If I hadn't done that, If Joji Thomas from the Economic Times hadn't made the entire list public a couple of days later, people would not have known that their accounts had been blocked.
What was actually adding to the confusion, and I will take this to Mr. Chandrasekhar in just a minute, was that you could actually access some of the blocked accounts depending on which service provider you used or whether you logged on to see those accounts from a phone. And it was really confusing because I was getting all these tweets from people saying I've been blocked, and I actually thought initially it was a joke because I could read them. And that to me also, sir, points a hole in our understanding of technology and our understanding of social media. And I want to take that to you, but Kabir Bedi, if you want to come in here, you're on Twitter, you don't like what the government's done, why?
You know, Barkha, it's very difficult to argue against a government's legitimate use of power in trying to maintain internal security, communal harmony, etc. However, if you actually look at their track record in this matter, it's not very encouraging.
Yeah.
Let me give you a few examples here, very important examples. For years, we were never allowed to use walkie-talkies on movie sets because terrorists might use them. Radio taxis, which are available around the world,
yeah,
are not permitted in this country because terrorists might use that frequency. Even today, thousands of kilometers of the Himalayas, the deserts, rural areas, islands are without connectivity on mobiles, but satellite phones are banned because terrorists might use them. They went after BlackBerry, saying, we can't crack your codes, terrorists might use them. They tried to ban BlackBerry.
Jammu and Kashmir didn't have mobile phones for about a decade, actually.
Yeah. So, you know, what I'm saying is that, and also, if you look at the whole institution of radio, they have stunted the growth of radio in this country on what basis? You can argue politics, you can read the news, radio can't, national security. So this definition of national security is a very arbitrary definition of
and
national
paranoid
security.
Are you suggesting a kind of paranoia?
There is paranoia, there is an arbitrariness, but let me say this. Let me give you one, the most telling example, which I got from Pranesh's research.
Yeah.
Between January and June 2011, Google released its report, transparency report. There were 358 requests from the government of India to block websites. Of these, 8 were based on hate speech, 1 was based on national security, and 255, which is 71%, were based on criticism of government. And that includes state governments.
Yeah.
So, you know,
Mr. Chandrasekhar, do you want to come in there?
National security, we're in trouble.
2 points here. One is using national security as the fig leaf to do a lot else. And the second, a kind of antediluvian approach where the technology is not fully understood by those who are administering the blocks. Where, for example, the circular sent out by your ministry at the bottom of the page said the website should not be blocked, the URLs should. But in the narrative and in the implementation, nobody actually even got that distinction.
No, I think this is a process which has been an evolution, and dealing with this technology is something which I think both in terms of dealing with the negatives and trying to use it positively is very much a work in progress. Let's understand that. There's no two opinions about that.
Yeah.
When the need to block arose in the first instance, it was done in such a manner that it was not just a page but a whole domain which was blocked.
Yeah.
Then people realized, hold on, this is not the right way of doing it. You need to pinpoint what exactly is the objectionable part and block only that. So that is one.
The parody accounts of the Prime Minister as well, right?
Well, there. Let me.
That's
let
a
me,
national interest.
Let me come to. That's a slightly different question.
Yeah.
A very different question.
Because when you are talking about parody accounts, that has a different implication because people get an impression wrongly. That this is what the Prime Minister or the Prime Minister.
Sir, you're dealing with educated people, computer literate people. That's what a parody account is.
Mr. Kabir Bedi, please remember there are only 100 million people who use the internet in India. There are 1.1 million
people, sir.
Please understand. But please understand,
there
are one
population of most European countries.
Please bear me out. Okay. Because I think one of the important points in discussion and debate is to hear the other side.
Of course.
But so, okay. What I'm trying to make is
Kabir's raised an important point.
100 million people use the internet. 1.1 billion people still do not. Okay? It will happen, but progressively. The point I'm making is that as long as there is something which is happening on the internet, even if it is something which hurts somebody or it causes offense, that is one situation, but when the leap is made from the internet to something happening physically on the ground, that's a different situation.
But
who makes this assessment? That is made by people who are dealing with the ground
and
situation.
And that's where we're asking the question, that is that what actually happened? Ramesh Srivatsan, if I can go to you. Because we're talking about parody as well, and that is a separate, actually you have to separate the strands of this conversation, because some of the blocking happened because of the social unrest, and the other was because the Prime Minister's office felt that there were accounts that misrepresented it, that people could be confused and think it's actually the Prime Minister. Now actually, again there's confusion, because I can access all of those so-called parody accounts, they're accessible. But Ramesh Srivats, you said on your Twitter feed that instead of being an emerging power, we've now become an emergency power.
Yeah.
it's a good crack. Yeah. But is it really that bad?
It's not really that bad, but I'll go pretty much with what Kabir was just saying.
Yeah.
For me, no. Okay, I'm being a bit kookish about this.
Yeah.
But I think this whole Northeast thing became a rather convenient excuse to now put everything down and do things they always want to do. I mean, this is not new. They've been doing this for 1 year. Hmm. You know, when the government...
The real reason is the Northeast.
When the government defines hate speech, right, I don't think they look at a speech which promotes hate. I think it's speech they hate. You know, when they don't like something, they say, okay, man, I want to ban it, right?
Yeah.
And that's the way. See, at the end of it, it's not unique to our government. It's a power thing here. Most entrenched powers don't like people to start talking to each other.
But Ramesh, what do you do if you find something really ugly? And I'm saying ugly, and I know ugly is a subjective word.
I'll tell you what you do.
But what do you do
what
when you find
here?
Communal, ugly expressions online? And all of us on Twitter know there's plenty of that rubbish.
No problem. Yeah, you ignore it. Number one, I'll tell you. What are we doing here? I may not agree with what he's saying, right?
Yeah.
But how do I do that? Do I go shut him up? No, right?
But he's not abusing
you. Hang on.
He's not abusing you. He's talking to you in a civil way. There's a code here.
See, at the end of it, wait, at this point, then I try and give a counter argument, right? You're talking about abuse now, or you're talking about misinformation?
Yeah.
In case of misinformation,
yeah,
why can't government fight misinformation with information? Right? That's the way. Instead of blocking misinformation. I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because they've lost all credibility. It's not that government doesn't have resources. But if they spend the resources putting full-page ads on people's birthdays, you know, and when do people start beating the government? Government with its resources, if they find that some people are spreading rumors, can't they go and correct it? Can information be used to
find it? Manish, I'm just coming to you, Sanjay. Manish, two different points here. Ramesh's cynical perception that you guys always wanted to play Big Brother, you've got your chance to do it, you're using the Northeast as a fig leaf. The second being, hang on, even if we accept, as Pranesh said, well-intentioned anxiety, about the social unrest, very serious unrest that we've seen in India in the last few weeks. What does that have to do with accounts, Twitter handles that are about the Prime Minister?
Well, essentially, Varka, you've raised 3 points.
Yeah.
With regard to the first point that he's made, that governments, you know, across the board are heavy-handed, I concede that argument completely, because if you look at the International Herald Tribune today, there is this account of a Pakistani called Profoundly Major, yeah, you know, who suddenly disappeared, you know,
from Twitter
or from the world itself. Yeah. Nobody really knows as to, you know, what's really happened to him. So therefore, you know, that's a tendency which governments across the board have. And I think there is a need to use this power in a very circumspect manner. The second thing is, you know, you are talking about rumors and combating those rumors. But what I'm talking about is something far more profound. It's cyber aggression. Countries today use cyber technology as a method of disrupting societies and disrupting programs in other countries. I'll give you an example.
But that's not what happened here.
No, for example.
What does it have to do with what we're talking about?
Because of the simple reason, Barkha, that if at all, tomorrow, evidence emerges to show that the kind of hate speech which was put out wasn't essentially provocative hate speech for the heck of it, but it was an orchestrated, premeditated attempt in order to disturb social peace in India, then we are talking about something very serious. And incidentally, let me tell you, a large number of Western democracies are today justifying cyber aggression as a legitimate means of war.
Okay, I'm going to allow Jay a quick rebuttal Sanjoy. Jay, I'm just coming to you.
This is the old foreign hand argument. And even now, it has been just knee-jerk utilized against some of our neighbors, and then embarrassingly have had to backtrack a little bit. Cyber aggression that Manish is talking about, not disinformation, but actual cyber attacks on our nuclear facilities, cyber attacks disrupting our telecommunications.
No, he's talking about an orchestrated
but orchestrated disinformation campaign. Let me reiterate what I said. Why don't other Western developed countries shut down these sites? Because they actually monitor them and use them as early warning, so that they prepare and prevent and preempt.
Sanjoy Hazarika, the point has been made by Ramesh Srivats that the Northeast was what was happening with the Northeast, both in Assam and in terms of people leaving Bangalore, people leaving Hyderabad, people leaving Pune, and so on, is a fig leaf. As somebody who knows the Northeast like nobody else does, what do you think?
Well, I think that secretary basically asserted the fact that it was not his ministry which calls the shots on an issue like that, it's the Ministry of Home Affairs. And that's really the first ministry off the block that takes a decision on issues of security and tells other ministries, this is what you need to do.
Yeah.
Now, if I understand the government, that's how it works. Secondly, the Ministry of Home Affairs itself was very slow on the uptake in attempting to even block these vast numbers of bulk SMSs that were
which actually has much more traction than the online world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the third thing that I want to say is that, you know, if this is the case, then they were pretty slow. B, if you want to deal with the situation, you have to deal with it in collaboration with the social media, and the media. You can't just say, yeah, we're going to restrain you, we're going to restrict you. I think there's a difference between restraint, which is a sense of collaboration, and self.
So there was an opaqueness and a lack of communication, a lack of transparency?
I think absolutely.
Srivast Krishna,
Barkha, I am one of those who believes that freedom of speech and security of the state, security of the citizens, are the two foremost values in any democracy. When these two come to clash head to head, I completely agree with the secretary that the security of the citizens matter. I can't take Ramesh Srivats. I follow his Twitter handle. I love his tweets. Very funny, very sarcastic. I can't take him to the family on the ground in Assam who got killed and say, you know, have some solace. He tweeted this is freedom of speech. Be happy. That was used to inflame passions to kill the guy on the ground.
Just 1 second. That
is, 1 minute. Let me complete, Ramesh. Let me complete.
Yeah.
It is an extraordinary situation, and any extraordinary situation calls for extraordinary measures. This is thing happening on the ground. That is not the time to sit and modulate and say, Ramesh Srivats only said, you know, this part is okay, this part is wrong. You don't do that. There is a situation which is boiling on the ground. the security agencies have got enough evidence.
But what about Sanjoy's point that if it was that response needed, then it came quite late?
And if they had done it quite early, Sanjoy would be the first, along with Kabir Bedi, to hang Mr. Chandrasekhar and say, you are coming down on freedom of speech when nothing has happened so far.
He is on
a difficult wicket. Hold on, it's a difficult wicket. You do too early, you're damned. You do too late,
so
you're
saying
damned
if you do, damned if you don't. Can I just get Ramesh to come in there and then I'll come to you, Pranish?
Yeah, in the end
The point being made here is that the guy or the girl behind the laptop or behind their BlackBerry or iPhone or whatever your choice of device is can afford the luxury of instant commentary. Governments and states can't. They need to act. That's the point he's making.
Two things here.
Yeah.
In one case, in fact, surprisingly, I agree with some of the instant measures taken. You know, for me, when there's a clear and present danger, if there's an actual riot on the road, fair enough. It's like a curfew is also a violation of civil liberties, but you do it, right, when it's needed.
Yeah, yeah.
Call this a digital curfew, okay?
Yeah.
So when there's clear and present danger, no problem. It's a temporary measure.
Yeah.
You do it very, very temporary and get out of it. My point is, this is a generic thing. It's been going on and on. Let's not just look at the Northeast issue here. Take the SMSs, right? So there were SMSs, there had to be a curb, so it was brought down to 5, fair enough, man. After 3 days, why did 5 go to 20? I mean, either the threat is gone or it's still there. Right? If it's gone, it should be unlimited. Else it should stay at 5 or 3. I mean, what sense does it make?
So
my point is, there's a general, look, there's just a need to control. Right?
Need to control.
You can need to control with emotive issues. What will I tell the person on the... In Kashmir, the family, hang on. Tell me in India, in one case, why is it always the guy who incited, who said something, who's responsible? What about the guy who went and actually killed, man? The guy who burns the bus is never gets...
not responsible.
How many times have I seen a guy who burns a bus ever been caught?
They're
not
mutually
exclusive. But
whoever said that the guy who went and did the actual act...
Because they are mobs, you know, and the mobs, nothing can be done. In India, right?
Can I interject?
You tend to have contempt for people as if they're brainless people.
One cynical perception is that the big daddies of those or at the helm of orchestrating violence get away. And it's the online guys because they're easy targets. I think that's also what Ramesh is saying. I want to introduce now Amit Paranjpe. He's an entrepreneur from Pune. And he found his account blocked. And you said you were confused and you were disappointed. And one of your tweets said, I don't even tweet political stuff. As if you tweeted political stuff, that would somehow explain it all.
I know, that was probably not the right thing. But, you know, last 3-4 days have been really crazy for me. I mean, they have been confusing. They have been, initially there was shock, then there was surprise, then there was bewilderment, and now it's frustration, right? And it goes through with my friends and family as well. Because even including my parents, I've had to explain to them, first of all, what Twitter is. And then I've never been on any blacklist from my school days through IIT or through other programs. And suddenly I appear on a blacklist no less than the government of India.
Are you feeling important?
No. This is definite. I mean, I am loving that I'm on your show, but this is definitely not how I had envisioned that I would get a chance to be on your show. So, I normally tweet, technology, science, cricket, sports, you know, little bit about Pune civic issues like garbage, traffic and things like that. And, yeah, I do tweet some media articles, but, again, not my opinion, just, you know, from major media like NDTV or like other papers, I'll post those articles or retweet them.
Yeah.
So, I'm still completely confused in terms of
what do you think
search
happened? You don't know.
I understand a little bit of technology, so there's some search that was done, but I still can't figure out how, I mean, I don't need left, I don't need right.
Did he incite a riot? Did he commit hate speech? And I actually think there are people online who are guilty of hate speech.
I don't know Amit's specific case.
Yeah.
But there are people, yourself included, Rajdeep Sardesai, Arnab Goswami, you've been called a whore, you've been called a bitch, you've been called any other thing which I can't say on this.
Please.
Would you like it? Shall I call you a bastard, that your father is a bastard, your mother? Would you like it? Is that free speech? Isn't there a law of the land? I mean, this is
Jay,
not allowed.
Jay,
that is the law of the land.
Hang on, one more thing.
And Jay, you're wrong on one account.
No, I'm
the US
I'm
government has blocked several sites. Go see Mega Uploader. Go see File Post. There are a number of URLs who get blocked.
Okay, here's the
copyright violation.
Here's the
actually,
violation.
No, hold on. There are copyright violations also.
Important question. You said you would still uphold the right of somebody to abuse. To say somebody's a whore, to say somebody's a bitch. And we're using unparliamentary words on this channel for a purpose.
We don't know how else to trigger the argument.
I
can't speak for you. I can't speak
for
anybody else.
I'm asking why, as a parliamentarian, you defend that right?
If he could call me those names,
yes.
I said, obviously I won't like it, but I will defend your right to say it.
That's why? Why? I'm trying to ask you why.
That's the essence that's of freedom speech, of speech.
Right? I mean, otherwise it's just freedom of nice, pleasant speech.
The difficulty is that a lot of people use the anonymity of Twitter or the anonymity of all these networking sites to take out their angst against everything, and including the fact that they were born. Now, the fact is that, you see, there is a golden median. And the golden median between freedom of speech and the websites or the platforms which disseminate it is self-regulation. And I think it is important that while you respect free speech, you should also respect the right to privacy. You should also respect the right of other people to respect themselves. And I don't think that they are mutually exclusive.
Can I get Kabir and Pranish to come in with a sentence each, and then I've got to go to a break. So briefly, abuse and venom, there's all of it online, along with lots of other exciting, great things. Let's not simplify this into an either or and vilify the medium. The medium is what everybody makes of it. You know, like in TV, like in newspapers, like in the online world. But the example that Srivatsa Krishna raises, juxtaposed with a befuddled Amit Paranj by saying, hello, ye kya hua? Now, does the Voltaire principle apply all the time? That you can say what you want to, that's free speech, and even if I hate you for it, I will defend your right to say it.
Well, that is the essence of free speech. Free speech
does that include abuse, slander, and communal
hatred? Free speech gives me the right to offend you as long as I'm not doing anything illegal.
That's
or
right.
Asking somebody to do something illegal. Whatever applies on the ground applies in the online world.
Pranish?
I think we're going into a different topic right here, because the current discussion isn't really about people being abusive online, about whether you should defend their rights. It's about an exceptional circumstance that was created and an exceptional response that was required. Was the government justified in censoring?
So you're saying online use and an idiom, as it were, for the online world cannot be clubbed with this. Sanjoy, just a brief point before we go into a break.
Well, I think the point is, where does abuse become the spreading of hatred? And I think that's a very fundamental issue.
And who decides?
But when that results in bloodshed, you're going to call the issue.
If it's defamatory, if someone says something defamatory, there are other laws. You can't go to court on
well,
it.
Well, I can tell you this. Okay, hang on. I've got to take a break, but I can tell you this, that if you have anybody going to court against anybody online, it's immediately positioned as the big guy speaking on the small guys, like, you know, people in the public space have no right to legal recourse.
But if you block people also, it's a big guy taking on a small guy. I mean, what's the difference?
Barkha, Oliver Wendell Holmes' Privy Council judgment said, your right ends where the other man's nose begins. Yeah. In a judgment in a case where a man walking in London was swinging his umbrella and hit the person at the back, and he was told, and this is a landmark judgment, your right ends where the other man's nose begins.
Now, here's the problem. My rights to extend the segment end right here, unfortunately. I've got to take a break. When we come back, you've had people here saying the essence of free speech is that even if I hate what you're saying, I'll let you say it and I'll stand up for your principle to say it. You've had others saying that, hang on, that can actually spread hatred. It may not lead to incitement of violence, but it can spread hatred, is the point that Sanjoy is making. Also, the telecom secretary may want to tell Amit Paranj Pai, what did he do wrong? Why did he get blocked? Coming back after the break, I'm taking your questions. Debating whether the government has blurred the line between free speech and hate speech as it has clamped down on web pages and some Twitter handles. Before we go back to the panel, let's take some questions from the audience.
I would like to make a point to the chairman there that the correct response to bad voices is not no voices or less voices, it's more voices. And 100 million is a huge number. I mean, please trust the intelligence of the netizens I'm sure they know what they're doing, and over time, I'm very sure that the good voices will overcome the bad ones.
All right. An interesting point there. I'm going to park that thought, Mr. Chandrasekhar, and come back to you a little later. An interesting thought there that even if venom travels faster a little bit now, in the long run, if you engage with social media, you can actually turn the table. Let's take another question here.
I'm a simple Indian, go to work every day, take care of my family, worried about the vegetable prices.
Are you on social media?
I am. My question is simple. Here's a criminal or equivalent of a criminal who comes on the net, claims credit for a crime. We're trying to block that expression of his. Are we going for the criminal? Are we doing something about that?
So you're saying what, in a sense, Ramesh was saying, that there's more focus on this, on the words rather than the action.
Yeah, on the net rather than on the individual.
All right, let's just start taking that back to you, Manish, if we can, to start with. It's an important question being raised here, and that is mixed up priorities, and you've got to deal with social media. And the social media engagement policy of the government just came out now in the aftermath of all this chaos. And you went off Twitter. Was that you on Twitter? Was that an impersonator, by the way?
Well, it was actually both.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What does that mean?
It means it was me and it was somebody who was abusing me. So therefore, you know, both of us went off Twitter, fortunately. So, but be that as it may, I completely agree with you. You know, the fact is that you really cannot be oblivious of the fact that you're living in a wired and you're living in a networked world. And governments also have to go across platforms in order to reach out to people. But while doing that, I think what you need to circumscribe is, as you rightly put it, that hate, rumor travels faster than anything else. And if at all you don't act in time, you know, by the time you've acted, maybe you would have had 200 people dead.
What did Amit do?
Well, to Amit, I have a specific remedy. Amit, I think you must take the government to the cleaners and claim damage for this. And if you can't find a lawyer, I'll be a lawyer. Because I think that's completely unacceptable.
Now, that's
Section
been a good...
Section 69A does not include
right. Sorry, Pranish, what?
Section 69A, the rules, don't give Amit any such right.
Really?
In fact.
He can't sue the government?
Let me tell you. The Section 69A is again circumscribed by the overall rights that you have as a citizen under the Constitution of India. He can always avail of his fundamental rights.
Okay, so
they
tell
him that he's been blocked. He found out many days later. And how is he supposed to go through the government?
Mr. Chandrasekhar, maybe one line as Manish is suggesting that he sues your ministry. One line on what happened to Amit.
Well, I wouldn't be able to say specifically what happened.
You mean
in this
mistake
case. But let me say this.
Yeah.
That when you're dealing with a situation like this, and when a request has been made from the law enforcement agencies to block 310 sites.
Yeah.
Maybe it's possible that one or two of them have not actually been the cause of any harm which has taken place on the ground. It's possible. I'm not ruling that out.
Kabir,
but there is a remedy, because the right of the government to take such action is very clearly laid down in the law under what circumstances you
can
do it.
So what should he do? What should he do?
So he can certainly make a reference back to the government saying, hey, hold on a moment. I have not done anything which can be even remotely linked
Kabir,
to this.
Kabir.
There is also a legal remedy. Both are available.
Kabir, quickly.
Look, Twitter has about 200 million followers worldwide. It has about 16 million followers in India.
Yeah.
Of the 16 million, the government picked 16 accounts, right, to target. Of these, 8 are parody accounts of the Prime Minister, which is a matter of national security at a time of rioting. I mean, where are the priorities and who is deciding this?
Manish, do you want to come in there on the parody of
I'll tell you.
Picking on Kanchan Gupta.
Insofar.
Who is deciding these things and is what application of mind?
No, I think
on a matter as serious as
we're talking about parody, and we actually have somebody who does a comedy handle on Twitter, Unreal Times,
think,
and we've got Krishna
Kabir,
from there. But Manish, on Kabir, the PMO objections.
No, I think Kabir has a point with regard to parody accounts. But I guess, you see, if you look at the other side of the argument, parody accounts also feed into the real world. It is not that Twitter is limited to Twitter itself, or Facebook is limited to Facebook itself. You know, when they get extrapolated to other media, and the point which Mr. Chandrasekhar was making, that there is a possibility of misunderstanding, that a parody account is really taken to be an official account of the PMO,
or an account of the Prime Minister.
Manish, I think there is a danger now, which we need to take into account. One minute, actually one of the accounts who positions itself as a parody account, I'm not sure that that account is always decent, and that therefore takes us back to the original argument that even if there's indecent abuse, venom, slander, should it all be allowed? In the name of parody, Krishna, you run the Unreal Times on Twitter, and you actually work where you're an A to a BJP MP, but that's your day job. Your night job is to run the Unreal Times on Twitter, and your joke on everything that's happened is how China has accused India of being a copycat and actually borrowing the best of the worst from them.
Being very ham-handed at it also.
Sorry,
being very incompetent and ham-handed been trying to copy China.
Krishna, when you try and do parody, what is it that you're aiming for on Twitter? When you try to spoof, when you try and do satire, what's the aim and why are you under this false name? Like people would say, why don't you, and you've been good, you've come out and said, hey, I'm the guy who runs it. Many people don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to hide under a cloak of anonymity. We have our names, the people who run it, we have our names put up, and we also have our email account, and if people have a problem, they can get in touch with us.
Yeah.
And when I'm trying to do parody, and I'm also trying to keep my own, the public interest in mind, and I'm trying to be in, trying to do it under the provisions of Clause 2 of the Article 19 of the Constitution, that I'm not going to do something which is inflammatory in nature, which is going to incite violence.
And you feel the government's been ham-handed in how it's handled things.
And I have a problem with also the rules under the intermediary guidelines rules. Mr. Panda also pointed out that these the rules, they're so broad-based in defining what is objectionable under the IT Act.
Srivath Krishna, the point is that, you know, whether you like the parody accounts of the Prime Minister's office or not, whether you hate them, whether you think they're loathsome, as users, we can block them. We can block them. We don't have to deal with them. We can let them, in a sense, stew in their own juices. But when the Prime Minister's office says these six should be clamped down on because they sound like the Prime Minister's office and people will think it's Dr. Manmohan Singh, come on now, who's going to believe that?
Barka, how many times do people actually go and read the bio of someone's account? You're talking... No, hold on, Jay.
Why do people follow on Twitter? It's after you read the bio. Kabir,
if I were to start an account which says Pooja Bedi and write all kinds of stuff which you wouldn't want to hear, I'm sure you will not like it.
Listen, by the very rules of the impersonation is forbidden. Impersonation is forbidden by the rules of Twitter.
Kabir, you are not seeing the vile and venom out. What has Barkha done or Rajdeep done? Who are doing? They may be having. You may disagree with everything Barkha does as a journalist, but do you have the right to abuse her, her mother, Rajdeep's mother? You may hate Narendra Modi for his politics, but the kind of hate we're talking to former Prime Minister Vajpayee and Modi, napunsak hai, isliye shadi nahi
hui. If it is no, legal on the ground,
I am a serving IAS officer.
All right, 1 minute.
It's not legal on the ground. It's not legal on the ground.
Srivath Krishna and Kabir Bedi, hang on. Jay Panda, yes. Yes,
Barkha, free societies do not restrict humor, parody, spoofing. And, you know, the argument being trotted out in favor of blocking parody accounts, Stalin and Hitler would have been proud of these arguments. And this is borne out by the fact that ratings of India, in terms of how free we are on the internet, rank us right in the middle, average.
Yeah.
And yet we take pride as the world's largest democracy. We say we don't have China's discipline and we can't have the same rate of growth, but we have freedom.
Okay.
But we are ranked very, very much in the middle.
Manish, one minute. I want to get a question here.
My question is that it is true that we are given the fundamental rights in Part 3 of the Constitution within the reasonable restrictions.
Yeah.
But don't you think that we have been facing these kinds of crises or these kinds of problems since the day of our independence?
So you're saying who imposes the reasonable restriction? Manish, go ahead and make your point while I take another question.
The point that I was making to Jay is that, you know, he's absolutely right that, you know, spoof, parody, comedy, everything is allowed. But when you do it under the guise of impersonation, you know, when you do not upfront, you know, identify yourself, I think there is a problem therefore, I think that is the qualification which should determine whether a parody account should be allowed to function or a parody account which is masquerading and impersonating as somebody else, you know, should actually be dealt with.
Manish, somebody impersonating the Prime Minister.
Jay Leno does not.
You're all speaking together. Ramesh, give me a second. I'm going to take a question here. Yeah.
I think this government goes into extremes. Either it remains silent or it says that's it. You know, and there are genuine grievances. People are unhappy. If you talk to anyone, they are unhappy about inflation. They are unhappy about the kind of conditions we have. But another example I want to quote, if you see countries like US, if you take an example of Milwaukee, the six people were, yes. President Obama, he came in front of people and he actually expressed his grievances. But here we don't hear anything. So many things happened in Assam. And so many people left. We never hear from RPM. Why is that so?
I think that's a very important point about more communication needed, not less. I'm actually towards the end of the program, Sanjoy. You want to add there a point? Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to respond to our political friends. I think one of the problems we have in this country is that we lack a sense of humor. You know, and I think if the parody thing was taken with a large dose of salt instead of taking it as some enormous threat to the dignity of the high office of the Prime Minister, I think we would cut a better figure.
Sanjoy, unfortunately, in our country, humor substitutes for humor.
You know, well, that's a cute thing to say, but we have no humor.
Okay, one question here. One question.
Cartoons, political cartoons.
Do we agree that we could?
Once again, there's a question here, please. Yeah.
Do we agree that we could have engaged with the social media in a better way? For example, we can use it to control or check rumors themselves.
Pranesh, you actually did an analysis of the parody accounts. You found that some had been left alone. Not all the the fabulous Yum Yum Singh is still there.
So here's the thing. Right now, we actually don't know what the six parody accounts are. Some media outlets have put out lists. Yeah. We right now actually don't know. Yeah. The government is not telling the people about it. Okay, and so one of the parody accounts that I've managed to look through does violate Twitter's own terms of service.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I'd like to know what the others are.
With you.
I'd actually like to know if they are blocked.
Manish.
Why don't the intermediary guideline rules or the 69A rules actually give them any right of redress?
Manish, too thin-skinned. You know, all of us in the public space, politicians more than certainly TV journalists, shouldn't we be prepared to get all kinds of things said about us? Yes, it offends. It does offend. There are vile things being said. I've been called burqa instead of barqa by people who obviously hate Muslims. And they think that's funny. I think it's disgusting. But am I going to now run after them to close them down?
Well, I think, Barkha, I entirely agree with you that politicians and people who operate in the public space need to be more thick-skinned than the others. But I guess, you know, what you have is an evolving situation, and I would entirely agree with you that some of these things need to be judicially determined. Yeah. And where there is a need for amendments, those amendments need to be made. Because if at all somebody is being blocked, I think it's a right thing to do, to put it out in the public space, let him know the reasons that why is he being blocked.
Together.
And incidentally, you know, Rule 9, you know, Section 69A, you know, has a very specific remit. It is not a blanket remit. So therefore, it can only be invoked, or it only should be invoked by the government if at all there's a real threat.
Okay, I've got to start ending. Ramesh, I'll allow you one sentence. You were trying to make a point.
I just wanted, on the parody accounts, I mean, saying that they can be mistaken for the Prime Minister is completely ludicrous. You know, either they make very sensible tweets, or they make completely fantastic tweets, or they are
silent. So the reason given doesn't convince you.
Which of those do you think impersonates the parody?
Well, you know, we swing from the sublime to the ridiculous, you know, in the cyberspace or in the real world.
In the name of Dr. Manmohan Singh, someone will say anything and then everybody will start believing it then.
Okay.
You need to have more faith in that.
Okay, this is the last question coming up here. Yes.
Well, in the recent scenario, social media is some place where everyone show their grievances. A lot of people have come up with parody accounts and anything. But is the question basically is, if one source is blocked, people definitely do go to other sources.
Yeah. And in any case, you block somebody else comes up. Mr. Chandrasekhar, very briefly, I'm really out of time. The lessons learned, just 30 seconds. Lessons learned for the government.
I think the lessons learned are that you can use the social media more proactively.
Yeah.
You can use the social media to engage with people.
Yeah.
Of course, you will be engaging with people who are on that medium, mostly.
Yeah.
Secondly, you can use even things like the mobile proactively, for example, by using it to communicate rather than to prevent.
So embrace the medium, don't shun it.
You can embrace the medium, but once again, I don't think these can be looked at as absolutes, because the need to intervene, the need to stop when there is something which is making the leap from the virtual to the real, and that real is damaging and causing lives and loss of property,
we can't wish away those realities which have to be dealt with.
Well, we've come back to where we started, unfortunately totally out of time, so this debate will now go offline to online, I'm sure, with a lot of feedback coming in. I'm totally out of time. I think the one thing we can agree on, whether we love it or hate it, social media is here to stay. And you can dislike many things about it, but for a new modern communication policy for any government, you've got to learn to engage with it and embrace it. And I think somebody made the very valid point that it would just be nice to hear our top leaders speak in any medium more often than they do. Thanks for watching. Good night.